It's 11:49 p.m. in the Ozarks, and you're listening to Night Call.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Night Call. I am Tess Lynch in the studio in L.A. with
Molly Lambert, and joining us, as always, in New York,
Emily Yoshida. Sorry, I was really worried I was not going to swallow that pretzel before I had to say my name. So sorry, that sounded
That's
weird.
Part of the...
Now I'm announcing
No,
it.
You just brought the mukbang.
element. And if you'd like to see us all eat a ton of pretzels...
The driest mukbang.
It can be...
Man. Guys, there's some breaking, I feel like, Night Call relevant news just yesterday as of this recording. True Detective back!
Oh, yeah!
Season 3.
Get that Trudy back!
Who's ready for the critical reevaluation of season 2? This guy!
Oh, really?
Yeah, I enjoyed
I've already seen it out there. I know you're not on Twitter anymore, but it's out there.
Not
it's
on Twitter,
strong.
And I'm out of the TV take economy, but True Detective season 2, not as bad as everybody thought.
No, it was
because
bad.
Because also True Detective
it was pretty
season
bad.
1, not as good as everybody thought.
Disagree!
Finale,
I would have to...
Not good.
I think if you went, oh yeah, the finale is terrible. On I've remained,
but it kind of doesn't matter because it took us on such a journey. Like I've never seen my husband get into the Reddit conspiracy,
oh, yeah,
that whole thing. He was up for like 3 days.
What a different time that was.
I know.
Yeah. And it looks like the new season of True Detective will also take us to a different time.
Looks like either the late 70s or 80s.
I think so. I think Rolling Stone said that there's an 80s timeline for sure, but that it jumps around.
Okay.
And it premieres as the third season. It premieres in January. And Nick Pizzolatto
that's
coming
perfect.
Back, which is probably...
He was back in the second one, too, just saying.
Was he... Wait, really?
Yeah,
yeah,
he was. All of them.
No, Fukunaga is the guy who was out.
Fukunaga was out. Okay.
And that led me to believe, I'm sorry, Molly, that he was the secret sauce.
Well, he definitely was the
it's
secret
true.
Sauce. I mean, the direction was what made the first season seem better than maybe it actually would have been.
Right, right.
With some other direction. But again, the second season, not so bad.
Well, I mean, what I kind of thought that like when you're riding that high on the first season, you have so much momentum, and then you have to reinvent a universe for a second season.
There's a sophomore slump, but go with me here. Like Colin Farrell was so funny in that show. Everything he did was like very hilarious. Rachel McAdams was great. I am personally very interested in the infrastructure of Vernon, California.
To me, it was kind of like a lettuce sandwich where you're like, it's good, but there's nothing. There's just lettuce.
Where's the bread?
Yeah.
A lettuce sandwich is such a perfect way to describe that show, that second season.
Thank you.
Put my finger on it.
What was the first season?
And not even
just
a lettuce
like
wrap.
Open face meat.
Yeah, it was. Just like it was one of those double decker KFC double decker.
It could have been that. I would have called it like a Reuben because it was funky. It had funk.
It had sauerkraut.
It was funky.
Matthew McConaughey's mustache is the sauerkraut.
Exactly.
Yeah, you were like, what's different about this? Oh, the sandwich got sauerkraut on it.
Yeah, they did not grill the second season at all.
You know,
they didn't even toast a second
season. You know,
as I was reading about the third season of True Detective, I found the fact that I did not invent a lobster farm. And I'm only saying this because I was like, was the first season a lobster roll? So I did not invent my childhood lobster farm. There was an article on BuzzFeed about a woman who, as a child in 1993, had ordered the exact same thing from the F.A.O. Schwartz catalog. And, It was a crazy story. I highly recommend you read it if you're interested
Would
in lobster.
Would you go on
perhaps.
About
Isn't
the lobster?
Isn't that F.A.O. Schwartz?
Yes, oh, it was.
Go on about the lobster, what the lobster did.
Okay, so she got the lobsters. I think you got 9. It was like a 3x3 grid of like these tiny little cubicles. And some of her lobsters died pretty early. Some of them hung on. And then there's one lobster named Big Joe who lived for a really long time, like more than 5 years. I mean, imagine having this thing in your room.
Like 12 years. You said 12 years.
No, she said more than, she said 5 more years. And I was like, I don't know how many years have passed. But so you picture a kid, right, who's like 9 years old, and they're like, lobsters in my bedroom seems
cool. Now
they're
a teenager.
Now they're dating, and there's a huge ass lobster in their room, and the lobster was over his life. He was like in a small thing, and so he tried to commit suicide by climbing out of his cubicle and into her dad's shoe closet to die.
Mm-hmm. Ah, poor guy.
I know. Worth reading the whole thing. Big Joe, R.I.P. Big Joe the Lobster.
Big Joe the Lobster. Yeah.
The deep, deep.
I mean, they lived to be super long. Like, he still would have been kind of a youngin at that age.
I have no idea. I just found out that chickens live to be 10, and I was like, what? Can you? I mean, it just seems unfair that a dragonfly lives for, like, you know, in the blink of an eye, they're gone. And meanwhile, the chicken is, and they stop laying eggs after a certain point, and then they're
Wait,
just
Wait, are you against them having a long lifespan? I'm confused.
Are you saying that chickens aren't useful after they're past their age of reproduction?
I would never say that.
Oh, the hand chicken's tail.
I'm just, the hand chicken's tail.
Hand hen.
Under his cluck. I just feel as though it's not fair how long animals, it's just like luck of the draw. There's no rhyme or reason how long an animal lives, like a big dog leading a shorter life than a chicken, you know, it just doesn't seem right.
It's all over
big
the place.
Long, live longer.
It's a mess.
That's our review of nature.
Yeah.
It's all over the place.
It is.
Get it together, guys.
The FabFitFun Fall Box is here. FabFitFun is a seasonal subscription box delivered 4 times a year with full-sized fashion, beauty, home, fitness, and wellness products for just $49.99 a box. We all got a FabFitFun box, and it was really great. It had a lot of really fun things in it, including some really nice bath things, a silicone sponge that had glitter and jelly. All the products are full-size. There are no samples of anything, and it's a fantastic value. Many products' individual value is more than the entire cost of the box. For example, members can choose between the Vince Camuto Luck Tote in black or red desert for a retail value of $128 or the Crown Brush 6-piece brush set in silver or black, whose retail value is $75. The total retail value of the Fall Box is over $275. The Fall Box includes in every box a Glam Glow bubble sheet mask, a beauty blender in Pro Original Chill Pop Bubble Glow Royal Apricot or Nude. Colors are randomized. A simply whimsical set of 2 tea towels. A Skin & Co. Roma Blue Capri Shower Gel. Sign up for FabFitFun today to get your fall box. The FabFitFun fall box is in limited supply, and these boxes always sell out. Use our code NIGHTCALL to get $10 off your first box. Go to FabFitFun.com to sign up and start getting the box for a life well lived. Use promo code NIGHTCALL to get $10 off your first box. That's over $200 of merchandise for only $39.99. Go to FabFitFun.com and use our code NIGHTCALL to get $10 off your first FabFitFun box.
While we're following up on the last episode, we put a poll out because, as those of you who've listened to last week's episode know, we had a really scintillating call from a woodworker who wanted to know whether or not he should make an Ouija board out of a possibly haunted and or party to a bloody crime piece of wood that some girls wanted him to, were going to pay him to make an Ouija board out of. And we polled our listeners. On Twitter, we polled our listeners. And then the listeners polled themselves on Facebook.
Go, listeners. Thank you for setting up polls on the Facebook page. We love that you've become a sentient organism.
And they were really good options, too. So props.
Yeah. Wait, so go over them to us.
Oh, yeah.
They're better than the Twitter ones because you can have the answers be as long as you want on Facebook. On Twitter, they have to be super short.
So the options were return wood to its ominous origins, then build a Ouija board out of non-murder wood, don't tell them what you did, charge them double.
Voted for that.
Build the Ouija board and accept that you might be cursed. Don't build the Ouija board. Or just build the Ouija board.
There's
currently return wood to its ominous origins is tied with build the Ouija board and accept you might be cursed. Still beating don't build it, which was my...
Molly was against it from the beginning. I mean, honestly, I've been thinking about this question since last week.
Yeah, same.
Asking strangers.
you know, the jury's really out. Some people have very, very strong opinions on not building the board.
Well, also when you brought in, build it and then use it to solve the murder, which some people are really swayed by that into like, oh, yeah, you have to build it.
It's a moral responsibility.
It's your moral obligation to build it. And I think I also realized that in prior Night Call canon, we've said that like ghosts won't actually harm you. they just want you to solve the mystery or whatever.
Yeah.
So maybe that precludes a curse.
Yeah. I mean, I think listening back to that episode, I was very much compelled by your argument about the tackiness of it. You're haunted by your own tackiness.
You're haunted by your own tackiness, and everyone is like, well, I guess it's like you don't have the Ouija board in your house, but come on. There's going to be like a telltale heart situation.
I'd have to see the wood, honestly, to know how tacky
it is. Didn't they say because it had a dark stain on it?
It had discoloration on it. It depends on what that means. If it looks obviously like a blood stain on it, then that's really fucked up. And they, like, no, I would not do it.
Oh, you changed to no?
If it's like got blood on it,
it does have blood.
I think
it for sure, it for sure has blood.
He said it had discoloration on it.
What else could it be? Dr. Pepper, it's blood.
It's water. Somebody,
somebody spilled some milk on the floor once, like before the
murder.
Can I also say that I think for some, maybe this is not correct to think this, but for some reason, it's also like the fact that the murder was so recent that this was like they read about a murder in the newspaper, presumably, and then went to the house where it happened.
It sounds, though, like enough time has passed that it's like nobody's ever going to be able to sell this house.
Right, like, but it's like people go.
I imagine a house that's like fallen into disrepair, that's boarded up, that has long grass in the front yard. Like it's a lot. It was recently enough that people remember it, but like it's not like it happened last summer or something. I think it's been a few years.
Do you guys know about that Los Feliz murder house?
Yes, I was just thinking about that. I think Emily may have been on her honeymoon if we talked about this, but there are several murder houses in Los Feliz, but I think the one you're talking about, Molly, is the one that is north of Los Feliz Boulevard.
Not the Manson, not the La Bianca house.
Not the La Bianca house, and also not the Frank Lloyd Wright Black Dahlia house.
Oh, yes.
But the other house where I believe it was a doctor who had fallen into financial straits, and he ended up attacking his family. And then the house, I think, was sold to someone else. And I might be wrong on the details because I didn't Graysmith my way through this topic. But the house was abandoned with like all of the stuff in it, including, I believe, a Christmas tree
That's
and unopened Christmas
said.
Presents. Yeah. And so people would come by and poke around and kind of trespass and look at it. And then most of them would get so scared that they would like flee. And there are a lot of accounts online of people who have like tried to poke around that house. And then I think it was sold, and I think it was sold to someone of note, but I'm having trouble remembering who.
Did they?
Probably Nicolas Cage.
No.
He buys up all the murder houses.
Yeah, it's true. All the murder houses.
Does he seem cursed by that?
Yes.
Yes.
So there we go.
Yes.
There's your answer.
But I don't know if it's a chicken egg thing.
It's a chicken egg thing. Yeah, he seeks out. He's already a vampire.
Yeah.
I just want to say that I have gone to lots of murder house sites as like a tourist, which is probably one of
so
the
tacky,
tackiest
Molly.
Possible things I could do.
Yeah. I would like to read a night email, if I may.
Sure.
Okay, so this comes from Dan. I'm writing to A, thank you for your contributions to the neglected deep sea content sector, and B, share the origin story of my fascination with our creepy abyssal neighbors. In 2014, I was 24 years old and living in a small brick walk-up in a part of Astoria near a bunch of auto shops and the Ravenswood power plant. I spent most nights watching Netflix, eating Jamaican food from a neighboring takeout place, or working late shifts at my job in Midtown. But one night I went out and got ripping drunk with a friend I knew from high school. I woke the next morning with a hangover and my laptop open on my bed. On the screen was the Wikipedia page for goblin sharks, which I had no memory of looking at, but apparently had decided to read after getting back to my apartment in the early morning. Goblin sharks have a mouth inside their mouth and were an inspiration for the monster in Alien Covenant. I have since developed a deep interest in deep sea creatures and now completely understand why James Cameron views his movie career as a way to fund his Captain Nemo fantasies. We will try to include content pointing everyone to the goblin shark with a mouth inside
his
mouth.
That was a really good sound, Emily just made.
I've definitely seen this guy before, though. So he looks like a goblin because, like, his beak is like a nose, sort of. It looks
like
a
goblin. Yeah, he's got
like
a goblin nose.
He has a beak?
Yeah.
A beak?
Yeah.
Why?
No, I don't know what you would call it. It's like the protrusion that would normally be the top of the shark's mouth is like a nose instead.
Like a proboscis.
Yeah.
Okay.
A shark proboscis.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. It's so weird looking. I love also, I love that this guy, whoever he is, when he gets ripping drunk, as he says, he Googles goblin
sharks.
That's
the night call listeners.
Yep. Very, that's very charming.
Yeah. What do you guys Google when you're drunk?
I mean, sharks, probably. Yeah. I think I tried to talk about this a little bit last week, but I was reading about the bobbit worm.
Oh, yeah.
I think I sent it to you. It is a worm that lives at the bottom of the ocean and has antennae and teeth. Emily, look up the bobbit worm, please.
Bobbit. I think I have my computer today. Oh, it's the second. If you put in bobbit, it's the second. I guess that makes sense. Oh. Oh, yeah, that's cool. It's like that that kind of shrimp.
Yeah.
The rainbow shrimp.
And it like jumps out of the bottom of a tank and like eats things with its giant crazy face.
It jumps out of the water?
Well,
yeah.
No, it's like in the sand.
Okay.
It's like a sea sandworm. A sandworm.
Yeah. Beetlejuice sandworm.
Yeah, it looks like a sandworm underwater.
It's like a colorful sandworm. It's beautiful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then it just like kind of like jumps out with its crazy teeth mouth and eats fish, like much bigger than itself. But it's called the bobbit worm because it has all these sharp teeth. And then in the Wikipedia it says, the name bobbit worm was coined in 1996 in reference to Lorena Bobbitt, who was then very much in the public consciousness.
That's a polite way to put it.
The name is inspired but only by the scissor-like jaws of the worm. The common supposition from the name that female unicids cut off the male's penises is baseless. In fact, the worms lack penises entirely.
I'm glad that our listeners are so into our sea creature material.
Yeah.
We've already gotten such a strong response.
It says they are broadcast episode. Spawners, which means they release all their gametes, sperm and eggs, into open water for external fertilization. There is no subsequent parental care.
That sounds crazy.
Air orgy.
How does that work? I mean, it's just like ocean is so big. Like, how do you...
Life finds a way. Tess.
It just seems like bad family planning. Like you should go to a tidal pool at least where there are
so
walls.
What's so cool about nature, you like try everything, see every possible different method of parenting and see what works and doesn't work. I guess.
It's a very retro way to parent.
Well, or future.
That's true. That could be.
It's a very commune way of parenting. When we live on the commune.
I like the idea of just like throwing a bunch of sperm and eggs out there and just being like, whatever happens, happens.
It's all chill, man.
You could do a little Frasier riff on that.
Toss salad and sandworm eggs. Yeah.
What is it? Let's visit the Duke?
Let's visit the Duke. We just found out Jonesy always says, let's visit the Duke to end a segment. And I just found out it's because it's Cockney rhyming slang for the Duke of Kent. Visit the Duke of Kent means pay the rent.
Wow. Yeah. That's British.
So British.
Super British.
I love it.
Super British.
So sieht es auch der Sozialverband.
Today's episode is brought to you by Simple Contacts, the most convenient way to renew your contact lens prescription and reorder your brand of contacts from anywhere in minutes. So earlier this year, I messed up my eye, and I apologize for that very TMI podcast that needed a trigger warning, but I didn't give one. Periodic eye health exams are really important, and you should never skip them. But as I learned, if you've been going to the eye doctor a bunch, and you think you're on top of stuff, guaranteed your prescription for your contacts is going to run out right before you need new ones, and you're not going to want to go back to the doctors. I wish that there were an easier way to get my contacts done in minutes, and then I found it. Simple Contacts is amazing. Basically, with Simple Contacts, you take 5 minutes, you can get a vision test from your phone or computer, and you don't have to leave your house. I took mine from bed, which I highly recommend, but you can do it wherever. Within 24 hours, a real doctor reviews your tests and writes you a new prescription, and then boom, a new batch of lenses is on its way to you. There are no appointments, no waiting rooms, and you don't have to pay for an office visit. Of course, you're going to run out of contacts before the night call party on September 5th, because that's how life works. So make sure you go to simplecontacts.com. You complete a redness check and an eye chart test, and then you're all set. If your existing prescription hasn't expired yet, you can just take a photo of it and send along your doctor's contact info, and then you order your lenses super fast. They carry every brand. Prescriptions are just $20, and the prices on lenses are great. I think the whole process took me less than 10 minutes, which is less time than it would have taken for me to just schedule an appointment with my doctor. Today's Simple Contacts is offering Night Call listeners $20 off your first Simple Contacts order. To save $20 off your lenses, just go to simplecontacts.com/call or enter call at checkout. Again, you want to see your doctor just to make sure your eyes are healthy, but when you need a contact lens prescription, Simple Contacts is the fastest, easiest way to renew and reorder. Again, you get $20 off your first order at simplecontacts.com/call or enter call at checkout.
Guys, we have a mystery.
Another one.
Another mystery. Who is Redfin Nightmares? The Instagram account that looks through Redfin and finds the most amazingly horrible real estate that is all super expensive also.
It's a lot of shots of walk-in closets with like one. There was a picture of a walk-in closet with like a Gucci box on an ottoman. It was totally empty other than this one Gucci box. And then another one that looked like an attic with a pitched ceiling and two giant stuffed bears at a table. Otherwise, completely empty.
It's a great account. Very evocative. I first thought it was our friend Brooke Baker who came on the pod before. Then I thought it was Tess.
Totally
Tess
not.
It's
not
her. Emily.
Tess, you could compete with this.
Though. No, I never could. Like it's so good. I've not seen any of these. I read Finn obsessively.
That's what I was going to say. I know that you look at Redfin, yep. So I just thought it was you. And also they were talking to me, and sometimes I just assume people are my friends, which is not.
What were they saying to you?
Nothing. They just tagged Night
Call. Oh, nothing. Nothing.
No, they tagged Night Call in a house. That was really insane. And then I posted it on our account. It was like, this should be the Night Call house.
Yeah.
Because I'm now into posting haunted houses that other people post as potential Night Call communes. And this one had like a lot of like blacklight art all over the walls.
Oh, yeah. I saw that one.
And
yeah.
Like an Egyptian, ancient Egyptian like bedroom and Ooh. Like kind of a jungle room, kind of a Graceland vibe.
Yeah.
I was into it. It cost like $25 million.
Maybe Molly, you have carbon monoxide poisoning and you've started Redfin Nightmares and you don't remember. It's like a disassociative, right?
Well, somebody else. Okay, so there's another really great account called Valley Haunts that is a person who goes around the valley and takes pictures of great buildings and weird parking lots, much like I also do
yeah.
in my free time. And so other people mm-hmm. were like, thought it was me. And we're like, you're Valley Haunts, right? And I was like, no, I'm not. Somebody else. And then I messaged that person to be like, who are you? And they said they're just
Did
like,
you ever get a response?
Yeah, they said they were like a guy from the valley who also likes to drive around and take pictures of weird buildings.
Do they follow you?
Yeah, yeah. And there's like a community of, including
valley
my
heads.
Friend Caleb Horton. Yeah, there's a community of people who like we all
haunt the valley.
We all haunt the valley and posted photos of Odyssey Video when it was closing.
Oh my God. Is the Iliad bookstore,
Iliad
which is right
bookstore
next door.
Iliad bookstore is still good.
Okay.
Iliad and the Odyssey used to be next to each other.
Oh, that's so cute.
It was yeah. so good. The Odyssey Video just closed. It was sad. Their landlord just upped their rent. They actually still had like a customer base and people who rent there. I met a woman who had been working there for like 8 years. She was bummed. Iliad Books, go to Iliad Books and support it. It's the best.
It's a good Valley Haunt.
Valley Haunt bookstore with cats, bookstore cats.
Can I tell you, what are some more Valley Haunts that you guys like? Because I was kind of thinking about this last night, as I tend to do when it's like not 1,000 degrees. And I'm like,
Sherman
you know what?
Oaks
I miss
castle.
The valley.
Sherman Oaks Castle is
What's
a great.
What's that?
That's the mini golf course that's shaped like a castle.
Ooh.
And it has an arcade. It's like on Sepulveda. Mm-hmm. Teenagers love to go there still. It has like a real weird, wholesome kind of like group date vibe always.
Nice.
And then I think I saw Justin Bieber went there and I was like, the kids still mini golf.
Emily, what's your favorite place to go to in the valley?
I don't know. I'm trying to think of my sentimental faves. I mean, like Fry's, but didn't Fry's like get like, isn't there something crazy or dark with
that? Oh, probably. That Fry's is Fry's. Good though, that you're talking about.
The alien themed one.
Fry's,
like,
yeah.
And that I remember going there so early in my time in Los Angeles because I had to get I had to get a hard drive for school. Oh, yeah. and our
classic
our
hard drive
was like,
getting
the only place to go is Fry's in the Valley. So me and my boyfriend like did the trip out there from like we were down by near Mar Vista, and so we were kind like on a trek to go get this hard drive at the alien
theme. That's really funny because there are definitely Fry's closer to Mar Vista.
But no aliens. Yeah. You gotta go get your aliens.
There's one in I think Manhattan Beach that is maybe tiki themed.
Ooh.
There's like that's what's so great about them. They all have different themes.
I had no idea about this.
There's an Alice in Wonderland themed one. Like the Valley one that we're talking about that's alien invasion themed is amazing and probably my personal favorite.
Dude, Fry's, if you're not a bad company and you're listening, you should totally sponsor Night Call.
Yeah, sponsor Night Call. We love hard drives.
I actually am in the market for a hard drive.
Yeah, we love hard drives and aliens. That's pretty much our thing.
Have you guys ever been to Game Dude on Sherman Way?
Yeah, I love
That's a good Game Dude.
That is like if you want to go to a place that's like a 90s video store but for video games. Go to Game Dude.
It's like being in an alternate high fidelity or something where everyone works there is super cranky, but it's great.
They're cranky because they know so much about video games.
Yeah. Oh, also, so occasionally I find myself in the market for an old doorknob. So I live in a super old house and all our doorknobs are falling off all the time. And apparently, like, there's anyone you ask where you're like, where do it? Like, if your handyman's like, I don't know what to do with these doorknobs, they're always like, you gotta go to Rick's. And there's this place called Rick's, and I think it's on Lancashire. And they specialize in like super old hardware. And I guess they supply a lot of production companies with all their like antique hardware. But it is a really strange store and it's really good. It's a good weird valley haunt.
Oh, that's great. I went to the Disneyland auction, which was in the valley at a giant former sports store.
Sports Authority.
And that was a really weird, good Valley scene.
What was the deal with that? Emily, did you hear about this too?
No.
I posted some photos from it. There was like a Disneyland auction of a collector's personal collection of Disneyland memorabilia.
Oh, so it wasn't a Disney like sponsored.
It wasn't
auction.
Sponsored by Disney, although I think they were like
Disney managed or whatever.
Yeah. It was funny because it was a thing for people who are like fans of being fans of a something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It was like a meta fan convention.
Yeah. And you waited in a line. And then we waited in a line with all these other like Disneyland heads. And then you get in and you just kind of walk around. And they put the best thing at the front, which is that they had the sea serpent from the 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Oh, my God.
Which scared the hell out of all of us as kids, I think.
Well, now it's even worse.
Well, no, now it's a Finding Nemo ride.
So, and it's scary, though.
It's also scary. That ride is inherently scary. This is the submarine voyage ride at Disneyland, and I presume there's one at Disney World. But the Disneyland submarine ride, they were built by like the same people who built Soviet-era submarines for the U.S. So they feel like Soviet-era submarines. It's like you're packed in there real tight, and then there's like the weird smelling water dripping in. I remember as a kid being like, this is the most claustrophobic situation ever, but it's worth it because I'm going to see underwater animatronics.
Yeah.
And it used to be 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea themed, and it was like sort of nature-based. Some of the animals were real, but then there were also like mermaids and then a giant sea serpent at the end that just comes out of nowhere.
I remember even as a child seeing, like, because I went to Disneyland when I was 5, and the mermaid feeling, like, I just thought it looked like it was molding. It was just like this big foam.
That's part
like,
of
mass.
It, too. Yeah, is that the animatronics do not do well underwater, obviously, and not super chlorinated, I'm sure, water.
I mean, now they've kind of done away with like a portion of the experience is not animatronic. It's almost like a projection.
It's all projections now. It's a Finding Nemo ride.
Lame.
It's much worse. It's got like a couple of moments. There's a part with like some underwater volcanoes there's like a couple of practical effects, but they mostly replace the practical effects with projections. But this was like just a warehouse full of like stuff.
I heard Slash was there. He's a big fan of Disneyland, and he waited in line for many hours, I think.
Slash.
Yeah.
You know, everybody from LA loves Disneyland. We're very basic.
I mean, there are some detractors. I know of people who will not take their children to Disneyland and they only go to Legoland.
Oh, Legoland's actually amazing also. It's better for babies.
They're different things.
They're different things. They're different things.
You have to do both.
I was like, no, it's Fairy Farm. But Disneyland has the best rides. This auction didn't have as many animatronics as one may have hoped. You know, they don't have any pirates or anything. They mostly had... posters.
They didn't take out like the racist pirates or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean,
or whatever they were, the rapey pirates.
The rapey pirates are finally being, they just did it finally, I think. They changed the scene, the famous Pirates of the Caribbean ride scene that is the whore auction.
Where else are the kids going to learn about this stuff,
well,
right?
it was my favorite because they have the redhead and everybody's going, we want the redhead. And there's like all the like other chicks for sale. And then there's like the one hot chick who's a redhead. And everybody,
and now you guys are both
when
redheads.
Politics,
well, Emily has crossed over into
redhead
zone.
Yes, Emily's a redhead now. Emily, welcome.
Hi. Well, when it was first dyed, it was a little Run, Lola, Run. It was actually more like Archie's hair in Riverdale.
Oh, yeah.
Like that kind of unnatural red. but it's sort of tamed itself since then.
It looks great. You're like Lilu a little bit.
Yeah, a little Lilu. Lilu is what we
a
aim for.
Lilu.
Actually, honestly,
a little Lilu.
The blonde Bjork is my actual inspiration.
Oh, totally.
So, yeah.
Well, they changed the redhead. The redhead who is on the auction block is now a pirate, apparently.
Mm. If anyone wants to buy a pirate.
Consumerist feminism in action. They were like, no, she's a lady pirate and she's one of the pirates instead. And now we can sell merchandise that's like, we've got a new pirate who's a lady.
Right.
We'll always remember the original Pirates of the Caribbean ride. Oh, and they had a coyote for sale that was $4,000 to $5,000, an animatronic coyote.
From Thunder Mountain?
No, it was from the like loop around the river. It was from the former
The Mark Twain.
Yeah, the Mark Twain. So if anybody wants to give Night Call $5,000 for an animatronic coyote.
Please do. As soon as you said that, I was like, damn it, Molly, now I'm really going
to
want that.
First things first, we need to get our Redfin Nightmare headquarters.
First we get the Night Call Haunted Mansion. Well, I also posted, I was at Starbucks and there was this ad for a open house for a house that was so haunted looking.
Oh, no.
I posted it on the Night Call Instagram. Spoiler, I'm the Night Call Instagram. But it's like this terrifying looking shambling like colonial mansion way back, and it's like built by the person who built like Griffith Observatory or something. It's
I saw this
super
historic,
but it just looks so haunted,
and it's only a million,
it's only like
four or something.
$5 million.
Yeah.
Whatever,
right.
I'm sure it's a lot
of
money.
Yeah, it does literally look like the
haunted
mansion.
And then somebody was like, it literally looks just like the Disneyland Haunted Mansion. I was like, oh, you're right.
Wow.
That's why I was drawn to it immediately.
Oh my God! Can we please live there?
Yeah,
it's only $1,040,000.
See, I knew it. It's totally affordable. $4 million.
I was just reading about a house that was for sale because it was the house of this woman who put out a cookbook about foraging where all the recipes were poisonous.
Wait, what?
This feels very Night Call.
Please tell us more.
I believe she lived in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. She put out a cookbook. She had like an Instagram lifestyle thing about foraging that was like, I live in the woods and like I forage all the food and then I make weird like nature-y food that's things like charcoal biscuits or stuff. Charcoal cinnamon rolls, I believe, is one of the recipes.
Mm-hmm. No.
And then apparently nobody like checked out her book or something and it got published and it had a bunch of recipes in it that had poisonous things in them.
Like mushrooms or herbs or just a variety of
things?
It was
like a variety of things. Some of the things were like things you shouldn't eat raw.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah.
I learned sort of not that long ago because I was like, why don't people chop up like the pits of fruit? And the reason is because they're poisonous.
Really?
Yeah. Like peach pits. If you ate a peach pit, it's like arsenic.
Oh, because there's cyanide in apple seeds.
Right. There's cyanide in a lot of fruit pits.
I used to have like a, I wouldn't say party trick, but a thing that I thought was cool that I did, which was just to eat an entire apple, including the stem and core. Because I got so sick of eating apples when I was a kid in the backseat of my parents' car and then having to hold the apple core. And then I was like, I can't throw it out the window. My mom, I was always like, take this. She's like, no, obviously not. So I was like, I'll just eat the whole thing. And then nobody told me not to. And like, eventually I was like, oh, they have cyanide in
them. Did it make you sick?
No. I mean, horses eat the whole thing.
Hey, Night Call listeners. If you're like us and you've got a little side hustle going, whether that's a podcast, an Etsy shop, a scooter rental startup, or whatever the case may be, Stamps.com will make your life so much easier. With Stamps.com, you can buy and print official U.S. postage using your own computer and printer, print on labels, plain paper, anything, and then hand your package to your postal carrier or arrange for free pickup with one click right from the website. Boom, you're done. Whether you're selling podcast swag, like our beautiful t-shirt, which you should definitely order right now, or if you have an Etsy shop or shop on Amazon, or even if you have a brick and mortar shop, Stamps.com is open 24/7 and you don't have to bother with a long-term contract. They'll even send you a free digital scale so you can weigh your packages and print the exact postage. It's simple. You get access to a wide range of postage options, not just stamps, and save a ton of time. Plus, if you were ever thinking about getting a postage meter, you won't need one now. Stamps.com is 50% cheaper, like a virtual postage meter with no wacky special ink. Stamps.com works with your regular old printer, making it easy to ship anything from home. So right now, use our code NIGHTCALL for this special offer, a 4-week trial and free digital scale. Go to Stamps.com, and before you do anything else, click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage and type in NIGHTCALL. That's Stamps.com. Promo code NIGHTCALL, all one word, NIGHTCALL. That's stamps.com, promo code NIGHTCALL.
Hey, has anyone here been to a restaurant?
Hold on, I need a second.
So I saw a movie this weekend that had somehow eluded me at a couple of festivals I've been at that I was at. And then I missed the screening that it was at. And I was destined to watch it at the Alamo Draft House with a glass of wine and a salad. Because that's how I roll at the Alamo Draft House.
A salad in a movie theater?
Absolutely. You want to know what the worst movie food to eat, like the most awkward movie
a
food
salad?
To eat is?
A salad.
What kind of salad? Just so let's set the scene.
It's an Asian salmon salad.
Salmon salad.
The most expensive salad on the menu, not to brag. Nice. The Alamo is very convenient where I live, so I end up going there a lot. But I saw Support the Girls, which is a new movie by erstwhile mumblecore auteur / founder Andrew Bowalski. And it stars Regina Hall. Woo-hoo. And Haley Lou Richardson and a bunch of like cool actresses also that I had not seen before. And it is about the staff of a restaurant, not a Hooters, independent neighborhood restaurant on like a frontage road somewhere in Texas called Double Whammies. And it's kind of just like a day in the life of this restaurant and kind of following the manager played by Regina Hall. And it's really good. It was, I've been hearing really good things about it and I kept meaning to see it and I was glad. I was kind of glad I actually got to like give my money to it.
Because he's a good director.
Didn't he do one about a chess competition?
Yeah.
That was like his
computer chess.
Yeah. And the last movie he did, I didn't see, but now I want to go back and watch it about personal trainers called Results.
Oh, yeah.
It's like the best kind of aspects of the mumblecore ethos, which is just sort of like, there's a sense, especially like near the end of the film, that like you genuinely don't know what's going to happen because it feels like you're literally just like sitting in this restaurant as everything goes haywire. And none of it feels like composed in a very movie-ish way. But yeah, I feel like I kind of wonder if this was viral marketing for the film, that Complex had this post that kind of went viral about how Hooters is closing locations and re-strategizing because millennials don't like breasts anymore.
They don't like big breasts anymore.
Sure, yeah.
It's true.
Like butts have surpassed.
They just like a more natural look.
It was a Pornhub poll, which Pornhub is becoming one of the more useful institutes for cultural study.
Yeah, it's true. 100% true.
Pornhub sponsor Night Call.
Yeah, seriously, Pornhub.
Yes, for real.
For real.
Yes, the post was... The post was based off of the Pornhub study and not recent news about anything happening with Hooters, although it is true that in the last few years they have been closing a lot of locations and kind of like trying...
Chain restaurants are closing.
Yes. Yeah. I think it's a widespread problem that I, for whatever reason, is hitting Hooters particularly. I mean, for a very obvious reason, I think. Mostly that it's embarrassing to go to a Hooters.
Yeah, but there's other probably. Ones.
What are the other ones called?
There's one Twin called Peaks. Twin Peaks.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think there's
Have you guys ever been to a Hooters?
Yes.
Yeah,
or
of course.
Yeah. I went to the one in I was telling my husband about this cuz I don't think he had ever gone to one. It's funny how like I know more girls who have gone to them than guys too.
Yeah, yeah,
I feel like it's just
they're
like
around.
What's that like?
Yeah.
What's going on there?
The wings
and it
are
seems
fine.
Safer than a shady strip club or something like that. It's like it's just like a chain restaurant with like girls who wear short shorts.
I mean a lot of waitresses are forced to dress sexy. You know.
Yes, yeah.
That's just their brand. It's like, force the waitresses to be sexy.
Yeah. And I mean, all the other restaurants, like, I mean, I remember going out for restaurant jobs for a while when I was in college and afterwards. And half of the restaurants in L.A., and I'm sure it's the same in New York, too. You have to submit a headshot with it. Like, it's not,
yikes.
It's not like.
It's an industry of hot people.
That's why it's good to work at Fridays, you guys.
Yeah,
Tess.
Do
not dress sexy at Fridays.
Yeah, Tess worked at Fridays. Tess had problems.
We've talked about this on the podcast before.
I know, but like, that is like...
I'm just saying, that's a very unsexy, like, if you are looking to
just be
serious.
You have the stripey, like...
I want to say it was just like a solid color polo, but then we had a Hawaiian period where we had to wear Hawaiian shirts, and I couldn't spend money on a Hawaiian shirt, so I borrowed a frat boyfriend's Hawaiian shirt and wore that one shirt
you
every
are
day.
Literally Jennifer Aniston in Office Space.
I try. Yep. I try.
But yeah, I remember going to the Hooters and just being like, it feels like it's a Porky's themed restaurant.
It
like
is,
that's the level of sexiness here. It feels like you're at summer camp. It feels like you're like a brightly lit summer camp. And it's like a very perky,
like
upbeat atmosphere.
It's a weird place because it's like a family restaurant.
Is it?
Yeah,
kind of sexy. Yeah, I feel like families go there.
Well, they actually did do a spinoff, I guess, in an attempt to diversify. Hooters did, and they have an actually explicitly family-oriented restaurant where I think the girls maybe just don't have their midriff spared, and the uniform is somewhat different, but it's just called it's called Hoots, which is incredible.
Did you guys see the thread on Twitter? Oh, no, Molly, you didn't. But there
Hoots.
Was a thread. Hoots. There was a thread on Twitter where there was this guy who swooped in after the news that Hooters was closing a bunch of stores. And he was like, I can save Hooters. He said the girls should go for a more natural look, not so Barbie. And then he said they should host debate nights where you debate your waitress. And then he was like,
he's like, I'm looking for a modern day geisha experience.
Yes, literally.
Like, with no irony at all.
And then he said, or
so awful.
You can have problem solving hostesses who like you bring,
give
I mean, as if they
advice.
Were your therapists and you can kind of get therapy at Hooters.
I mean, these all sound like hostess clubs, but
yeah,
but.
That exists.
Yeah, that exists.
It's just like you want, but you want it under the auspices of going to like a mainstream restaurant.
Well, also he kept saying it has to be super cheap. Which fuck you, dude.
Like, I don't want to pay anything, but I want a girl to take care of me and solve all my problems
I want hot
women
to be
and have an intellectual discussion with me.
Barf on that guy's head, right?
Yeah, I don't think the issue is... breasts being unpopular. I really think it's that Hooters is like so 80s.
You know, it's like
they have
but right now the 80s are back.
No,
man.
But like, you know what? You're right, actually. People are
you'd think they'd be flocking to a retro
restaurant. The uniform is like bike shorts now that you mention it.
I think they should play up the retro aspect more, though. I think that they should make it explicitly like a late 70s themed restaurant.
So you want them on roller skates?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I would want that. I mean, that guy should have just done his whole Twitter thing. He should have just been like, well, they're not on roller skates. That would save it. And he'd be right.
What about waitresses riding bird scooters, guys?
Ugh, the scooters.
Bird scooter. Segways?
No, the bird and the lime scooters.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
What?
It must be a new
Can we please talk about this briefly?
We can talk about this to close this out. Yeah.
Okay. Can I just say, so There are these two scooter brands, Bird and Lime, and they're everywhere in Los Angeles. Emily, it's nuts. It's
Bird
nuts.
And Lime sounds like what I would like a bot that
yeah,
I would
yeah.
make.
Yeah, it's a tech brand.
Out a brand name.
It's they started in San Francisco and then they like took over San Francisco.
Bird and Lime,
and
blow me.
They came here.
They don't even have an ampersand or a plus sign. It's AND. Do they know what they're doing?
No, they don't.
This is
the whole point.
The Birds and the Limes are competing brands, and people either love them or hate them. But the people who hate them will do things like cut their brakes, and then all of a sudden, and so Katie Nonopoulos at BuzzFeed just went through a whole thing about how people are getting injured on these scooters, but they're not like quantifying it. And people who are like, you know, but cars are super dangerous, guys. Like, but the scooters, and it's like, but the scooters aren't regulated and nobody's wearing helmets.
No, it's very funny. Okay. So, like, I've had this argument 100 times now, including with people who play devil's advocate, where they're like, don't be the old person who's like, the damned kids and their scooters.
Mm-hmm.
But my issue with it is that they regulate what's allowed to be on the street so intensely and don't let homeless people live on the street, even though they already do, you know?
Yep.
That the fact that they just, like, let the scooters be everywhere is shitty.
Are they on the sidewalk?
Yeah,
people
well, that's
leave
what happened.
Them
they,
everywhere.
Like, put them out everywhere.
Oh, my God. They're so stupid.
No,
what are they doing?
It's that tech thing of, like, break the law and then regulate it later, you know? Move fast, break things.
Yeah.
That's literally...
I mean, the sad thing is that they can't do a bike share like they have in literally every other city in America because they don't have enough sharrows and bike lanes
we
in
have,
Los
like,
Angeles to make that a functional...
city bikes and stuff,
we
though,
do
too.
Have city bikes.
It's just like...
You do?
Yeah,
only
yeah.
in
certain
neighborhoods.
Like downtown and
Santa Monica.
Santa Monica,
I think,
yeah.
Maybe in Koreatown. These are everywhere. My like, and especially they're like right outside where we record this podcast in Los Angeles now, which is really funny because like we've seen them like appear and then like you see like it morph sort of on the fly. I've seen now like a lot of like couples riding them together, which is really cute. And a lot of people doing tricks on them, which is great because it both fucks them up and
you show off and you show the man.
I saw somebody last week on Melrose, but it's also like it's funny because it's like it's making Melrose specifically sort of like more and more crazy, which is funny.
Yeah.
I saw a kid last week. I saw like this dude with like a fanny pack, a shoulder fanny pack, totally like driving away from somebody on one. And he went like, I'm gonna get you, you pussy. It's not cool. He was like, it's not cool to just tase people.
What? Well, you also just see people who don't have a clue as to how to ride these scooters and they just hop on and then you see the learning curve in real time and
no,
it's really awkward.
They go really fast. So they are like super dangerous and they kind of have made navigating
it's
the sidewalk
really
dangerous.
It's such a clueless. It's
but,
like these people are not from LA.
No. And they're for tourists.
Like, they have no
idea
totally, how.
And the argument people make is like their transportation for like, you know, like people will use them as transportation.
Well, because people don't really need a car to drive 2 miles, you know, so this is like a good alternative to that.
Right.
I mean, they're just if they were regulated, that would be fine. I mean, if there was
that's
like
the whole thing is I'm like or just like don't harass, you know, don't
or
leave, harass
yeah.
the homeless.
Realize
also,
the streets belong to everybody.
The streets belong to everyone.
Well,
yeah.
No, make them ride on the road.
Well,
they're supposed to ride on the road.
Well,
I don't think it's
oh, since they've been out for like about a month, you know, people complained. It's become a big thing. And so they've added some labels to a lot of them that say like you need a helmet or you're supposed to get some permit or something and that you can only ride them in the street. And they've started ticketing people who ride them on the sidewalks in certain places. So I saw people riding them the other day in Santa Monica on the street. And it was also hilarious because I was like, luxury cars are going to hit people on scooters now. Like,
oh, no.
It's insane.
That's a good business. I made some money off of that.
And then I saw a lot of them like on in Venice on the boardwalk. And I was kind of, not that I came back around, but I was like.
Venice is the
well,
place.
It makes sense there. Like any place that's wide open enough. Like,
or that has the tiny little streets.
Right.
This is infuriating.
Oh, wait until you're in town.
Oh, you're going to freak out. But they're actually being outlawed in certain areas.
Did we talk about what the guy said that we met on Melrose?
Oh, no, please.
No,
go ahead.
You should tell the story.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of scooters on Melrose. And like 3 weeks ago, Molly and I were lamenting the scooters as we passed by a store. And we saw the store owner come out like pick up a scooter that had just been discarded in front of his door, throw it into the street. And then he heard us talking about scooters and he looked at us and I was like, no, we're on your team. We're on your team. We don't like scooters. And he was like, I'm from New York. That's how we do it in New York. You leave trash outside my place, I shit on your head. And we were like, right, that's right. I was like, I'm from New York too.
I saw that tweet of yours. Now I'm glad that I have the context now you for know. It.
Yeah, like, people are destroying them in all kinds of funny ways.
Oh, that makes me happy. Yeah, people, let's go and destroy some while I'm visiting.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, people like learned how to cut the brakes, which is funny because it just
that's also bad
in.
Though. I mean,
that's,
like someone
that's
could
really
die.
Mean though.
No, because it just turns them into a regular scooter, like a
non-electric scooter.
No, but
somebody would be pumping those brakes, freaking out. I'm like, I've seen like kids on these things, which by the way, very illegal. Don't do it, kid.
But it's like, that's who it's for. Like, that I understand. Like, yeah. I don't think anybody is ever going to be, like, commuting to work on one of these, and that's their excuse they use for what they're supposed to be for.
Right.
But they're totally for, like, teenagers to, like, teenagers have learned how to, like, grind with them and stuff. And, like, I can't be mad at that because it's too funny. And it's going to fuck them all up so fast. It's like, just the company is going to end up paying for it. So like
there's a weird way to make money by charging them and also by like hiding them and finding them. It's like Pokemon Go. I got real deep on like what is going on with the scooters. And it made me feel so old. I was like, I don't
Bird
like
and Lime. That's the name of our foraging cookbook. That
That's what we should name our restaurant.
Yeah.
Or our butt-steron or whatever would be.
Asteron. Our Asteron. Hey, guys. Maybe when this podcast posts, people will still have 2 days left to get some Night Call t-shirts.
Yeah, they should do that.
Yes.
Our Night Call t-shirt campaign is underway and we have it just until September 5th. So, Emily, do you have the address or should we just we'll pop it into our social media and you can figure out a way to get yours?
Yeah, they're being made by cottonbureau.com. They're super high quality. They're going to look great. They say Strange Days and Lonely Nights on the front. And it's limited edition. So once we're done with the campaign on September 5th, that is the end of the shirt. So you're going to have a very rare and special shirt if you do pick one up.
September 5th is also an important date for another reason.
It is. It is. Just mere hours after our campaign ends, if you are in the Los Angeles area, you can join us at Tay French Restaurant in Echo Park. Don't ride your Bird and Lime scooter there.
You can have a foot on a bird and a foot on a lime, and then you can actually be riding a Bird and Lime.
Roll them. Yeah, exactly. we're doing a show, which as of now we are full on reservations for the dinner show part. It is very limited seating, but we will have a wait list and we're going to be emailing people about whether or not they're on that wait list. But you can feel free to show up for 8 and see if you can get in for that. If not, everybody is welcome at 10 p.m. for our after party. We're going to be spinning some tunes. Tess, are you going to DJ?
I don't know, guys. I'm so nervous. It depends on if I have any Ativan left from last time I had to DJ.
Regardless, the Night Call presence will be DJing the after party, so you don't want to miss that. It's free, but we'll have some surprise guests, which I think we're mostly booked now, and I'm extremely excited about.
There may be magic at the show. And also the show, if you want to come to the show and get your name on the wait list, if you can get in, we have magic. And it's $20 and you can be eating and drinking wine. Well, it's like podcast dinner theater. And we're really excited for it to be a super weird experience.
It's going
to
be
you.
Really fucking weird. And and I'm excited about it.
Just as the Night Call gods intended, it will be a very strange night.
So we can't wait for that. Excited.
Yeah, see you there.
Also, just a reminder, if you're liking the podcast, to please review, rate, and subscribe on iTunes or wherever you listen to us. We really appreciate it. It means a lot for our little podcast. We like your support. Thank you.
Thank you. And that does it for this week's Night Call. We'll see you all next week.
Goodbye.